What up, son? It's the tale of the tapes. The fuck life. Saying?
All right, so we're back here today for another episode of Tale of the Tapes. This is Season 3, Episode 7. And on today's episode, we'll be covering Cuban Link and The Last Emperor. So, as far as my predictions and expectations on these two, there's not going to be much to offer. Sure, I knew of Cuban Link because of Terror Squad, but never had a Cuban Link album and probably only heard like one song from him. I guess I figured he'd finish somewhere around the middle, and if the trend we've had this season so far is any indication, I'll nail that one perfectly. But as far as The Last Emperor, I'm going to give a very similar story. Although he's way more underground than Cuban Link, I still knew probably about the same amount of him as I did of Cuban Link. I never had a Last Emperor album or anything, but I had heard a song before. On first listen, I really didn't think either of them was super special, but figured Cuban Link to finish a tiny bit higher than The Last Emperor just based on, you know, more mainstream status, being with Terror Squad and things like that. But again, I knew close to nothing of either of them, so both predictions kind of a shot in the dark and didn't really have much expectations, to be honest with you. Since Cuban Link was the first of the two to have an album out, which came out in 2000, we'll start off with him here today. So let's get into some facts and info on Cuban Link, and then we'll discuss. His birth name is Felix Delgado, also known as Cuban Link, Link, and Lyrical Assassin. Born December 18, 1974 in Havana, Cuba. Origins listed as New York City, United States. Genres are listed as hip-hop, mafioso rap, Latin rap, and reggaeton. And his years active are listed as 1995 to present. So, we see his years active there listed as 1995 to present. And even though Cuban Link didn't have a solo album out until 2000, Terror Squad dropped an album in 1999 and he joined them in 1997. So, I definitely know he was involved years prior to 2000, but not 100% sure about the 1995. I couldn't really find anything on that specifically yet, but let's check out some additional background info on Cuban Link and see if we find anything else out there. Felix Delgado, born December 18, 1974, better known by his stage name Cuban Link, is a Cuban-American rapper and original member of Terror Squad. Delgado was born in Havana, Cuba in 1974. He and his family emigrated to the United States in 1980 during the Muriel boat lift, settling in the South Bronx in New York City. Delgado took on stage name Cuban Link and associated with fellow rappers Big Pun and Triple Sace in a group under the name Full Eclipse. They joined the local rap group Terror Squad, and Link performed on the track Tell Me What You Want from the group's self-titled debut album. Cuban Link was signed to Atlantic and began recording his debut LP 24K. However, without Pun's mediation, contract disputes between Fat Joe and Cuban Link and leaks prevented the release of 24K. In April of 2001, during an album release party for Angie Martinez at Jimmy Bronx Cafe, Cuban Link got in an altercation and had his face slashed when he was trying to break up a fight between Fat Joe and rapper Sunkiss. By that time, Cuban Link left Terror Squad. He joined independent label Men of Business in 2005 and released Chain Reaction. It included singles Sugar Daddy featuring Maya and Scandalous featuring Don Omar and combined some reggaeton sound as well. It was the largest independent deal at $2 million for a single album and an unsigned act at the time and a joint venture with Universal. So, when I first looked into it, there wasn't much there on Cuban Link, but as I dove a little deeper, I definitely found some additional relevant information. So, first of all, we do see that he was actually part of a group with Pun called Full Eclipse prior to joining Terror Squad in 1997, which I wasn't aware of, so that could certainly explain the year's active date starting at 1995. And on top of that, we see some pretty good descriptions on what happened with Terror Squad, both personally and business-wise. So I thought those things were relevant enough to bring up. But nonetheless, let's go right ahead and check out my write-up on Cuban Link, and then we can get into the actual numbers. While I did know one of Cuban Link's songs, that was where it ended, and I figured he was one of those guys that was around the crew, but never really got put on for whatever reason. I was partly wrong, partly right. It's not that he was never quote-unquote put on, so to speak, but after Pun died, Cuban Link had a riff with Fat Joe that caused his debut album to be shelved. He then left Terror Squad and released another album through a different label. Lyrically speaking, Cuban Link was way better than I ever gave him credit for and could possibly be one of the most underrated rappers of all time. He was great with both using different rhyme schemes and rhyming a lot of syllables. Anytime he had single-syllable rhymes, there were an abundance of them in each bar, and he was very good at keeping a topic, leaving him as a good lyricist overall. Cuban Link only qualified 3 albums for scoring. 2 solo and 1 with Terror Squad. The Terror Squad album was good, and both of his solo albums were classics. Of his only 41 song total, he dropped 14 great songs, another 17 good ones, and only 1 weak one. Amazingly enough, that makes over 75% of all of Cuban Link's music good or better. Like most other artists on a hot major label at the time, with a small body of work, little to no mainstream commercial success, and no other artist's influence to date, the impact department was not Cuban Link's strong point. Neither was originality, as there wasn't much overly original about Cuban Link or his material. On top of that, he took a decent amount from other artists before him, especially Biggie and Tupac, whom he not only copied a lot of lines from, but also his song styles, delivery, slang, and cadences. So that right up to me sounds like a very skilled but unoriginal artist who didn't put out much material. I'm always curious with stuff like this whether the solid scores will carry or the low scores will drag down. So let's check out the math here on Cuban Link and see where he winds up. Lyrics, he gets a 7, and like I said, man, he was great at, you know, using different rhyme schemes. He was great at rhyming a lot of syllables. You know, anytime he did have single syllable rhymes, there were so many of them in each bar. He was good at keeping a topic, all this stuff. So Cuban Link, a solid lyricist, no question about it. And I do want to go out and say that if Cuban Link would have had more material and he would have kept this pace up, he definitely could have wound up at higher than a 7. It's not to say that he would have, but he did climb pretty high lyrically in a short amount of time, only 41 songs, and got himself all the way up to a 7. So, yes, you know, you climb a little quicker with a smaller amount of material, but that's only going to last for so long, and then you're going to start to even out. So, again, to get that high and to stay like that without really giving yourself 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever many albums, to really just keep piling on, you know, syllables, rhyme schemes, different topics, different stories, dope punchlines, different metaphors, all this type of stuff, and just keep making the listener say, God damn, like, this motherfucker is just ridiculous. You know, it's like, you did it, and you were really solid, but, you know, you can only go so far realistically on 2 albums and 41 songs, but still a good lyrical score there of 7 for Cuban Link, no doubt about that. Albums, he gets a 6.49 with 2 classics. So, I mean, first of all, that's a great album score. So, yes, only 3 albums, 2 solo, 1 with the group. So, it's not like it's, you know, a great album score over the course of 20 albums or something like that, which is obviously harder to sustain. But nonetheless, I mean, still a great album score, and not for nothing, but his worst scoring album was the album with the group. He's got the 2 extra points for the 2 classics, and both of those classics were both of his solo albums. So all of the solo material that Cuban Link put out, 100% of it was classic material. Again, that would be more impressive had it been done over 10, 15, 20 albums, no question about that. But we do still have to acknowledge that this guy didn't put out anything other than classics when it came to his personal solo music. Now, again, that's bittersweet because, yes, 100% of his material that he put out were classic albums, but again, there was only 2 albums. So it helps in the sense that 100% was classic. It hurts in the sense that the maximum amount of points that he was able to give himself was 2 extra points versus somebody like Jay-Z or Eminem who had 12 or 15 classics or whatever it was like that. Not 100% of their material, but they put out more of it and still had a great percentage. Songs, he gets a plus 3.2, which is really, really solid. I mean, we talk all the time about plus or minus a full point in this department starting to become, you know, pretty relevant to what your final score winds up being. This guy getting over a full 3 points, so really, really solid stuff there for Cuban Link in the songs department. Like I said, that came from 41 songs total, 14 great songs against only one weak song, which came to 32% of his material being great. You slide the decimal point over, you get a plus 3.2. So an additional 3 points for Cuban Link there in the songs department. And Impact, he gets a just below average score of a 4.5. And like I said, this is pretty typical. When you have these guys that were, you know, signed to this major record label that was super hot at the time, they have this small body of work. They had little to no mainstream commercial success. For whatever reason, I'm not even blaming that on them. I'm just saying this is a typical story that you hear. No artist influence, at least up to the point that we're up to in the study, things like that. These are the typical types of 4.5s that you see. Maybe one name on the list of artist influence, one or two names, something like that. 1 to 2 albums, things like that. Like I said, when you get down in the 4 range, you're probably going to remove them from that big label being a part of that. You're probably going to remove some of those giant names featured on their songs and things like that. You may be down to 1 album. Definitely no names on the list of people influenced. So, you know, Cuban Link, yeah, he's up there, right? Like, we don't want to discredit how good Cuban Link was. We don't want to discredit the fact that even though he only put out 2 albums, every album he put out was a classic album, technically speaking, of course. We don't want to discredit that he was signed to Terror Squad and shit like that. So I'm not trying to wipe any of those things out. We're not giving this guy a 2 or a 3 here in the Impact department. But, you know, I think just all things taken into consideration, he does get a just below average of 4.5 in the Impact department. Originality, he gets the same exact score, just below average score of 4.5 in the originality department. And like I said when reading his write-up, first and foremost, there just wasn't really anything overly original about Cuban Link. When you listened to him, when you looked at him, there wasn't really anything where you were like, oh, what's up with this dude? Or this dude sounds totally different. Or what is this guy making songs about? And things like that. You didn't get any of that from Cuban Link. So right there, you're probably looking at generally, you know, average originality. And then on top of that, he did take a pretty decent amount. Now, you got to keep in mind, only 2 albums. So to take that much stuff from that many people on just 2 albums and 41 songs, I mean, I had to go out of my way to particularly bring up Biggie and especially Tupac, because like I said, not only did he take a lot of lines from both of those artists, but when it came to Tupac, I mean, there were just whole songs that sounded like Tupac songs. His delivery started to sound like Tupac, and Tupac is a very unique delivery. So to sound like that at all is, you know, obviously saying something. Some of the slang and like the words that he was using and the way that he was saying them, like his cadences and things like that, all of these things reminiscent of Pac. So it's not just the lines taken. It's not just this. It's not just that. It was all these things. So, you know, he was pushing a 4 for originality, to be quite honest with you. He was very close to being a 4. I thought what him and Pun did when they first came out for Latina, and I don't want to exclude Fat Joe from that or anything like that, but I'm just saying, I thought what that group did for Latinos in hip-hop at that point in time, I don't think that can be overlooked. It's not that there weren't any Latinos prior. You know, you had Cypress Hill and things like that, so I'm not trying to say that they were the first, but Pun the first one to go platinum, and they, you know, they really just brought it to like another level. So again, I didn't want to totally discredit the things that Cuban Link did, but there really wasn't too much there to give him credit for. So he was pushing a 4, but wound up with a just below average score of 4.5 in the originality department. So you add those 6 numbers up. In this case, it's 6 numbers because we do have the extra 2 points for the 2 classic albums. So like I said, you add the 6 numbers up, you divide by 5 because that's the number of categories, and you get a final rating of 5.54, which puts Cuban Link in 36th place of 222 artists done overall. So that would be a solid finish even for somebody who didn't have a subpar impact score and originality scores. For this guy to get 4.5s in 2 separate categories and still finish this high is actually pretty astonishing. A good lyricist whose both albums were classics and over 75% of their total material was good or better. Those few things by themselves were enough to carry Cuban Link all the way up to 36th place, even with just below average scores in 2 different categories. That should probably put Cuban Link inside our top 75 when this is all said and done, which, like I said, is impressive in itself. But to do that with two scores under a five really does say something. So I definitely want to give a major shout out to Cuban Link, an extremely talented and underrated lyricist for sure. And obviously shout outs to the whole Terror Squad. And with that, we've about wrapped up our Cuban Link section of the episode. So let's move on to underground artist The Last Emperor. And I'll tell you right away, I'm curious to see where he lands, because I definitely underestimated where Cuban Link would wind up. So let's get into some facts and info on The Last Emperor, and then we'll see what happens. His birth name is Jamal Gray, born May 1st, 1972. His origins listed as Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, United States. Genres listed as alternative hip-hop. Obviously not much there to discuss, so let's just read up on some more background information on The Last Emperor and see if there's anything else there. The Last Emperor is the recording name of Jamal Gray, Philadelphia-born hip-hop artist. Gray took his stage name from the Bernardo Bertolucci film epic of the same name, The Last Emperor. He attended and graduated Overbrook High School in Philadelphia, then went to attain a Bachelor of Science degree in Political Science/International Relations from Lincoln University. He moved to New York and began performing at open mic nights. The Last Emperor was featured in a verse on KRS-One's CIA Criminals in Action with Zach De La Rocha of Rage Against the Machine. 2 years after moving to New York, he was signed to Aftermath Entertainment and became a protege of Dr. Dre. In 2003, it was announced that The Last Emperor had signed to Raucous Records. A few singles were released in a period of 6 months, but the label unexpectedly stopped releasing any music. The Last Emperor then formed Red Planet Music to release his debut album, Music, Magic, Myth. He has opened for such acts as the former Def Squad, Redman, EPMD, DOSFX, and K-Solo, Common, The Roots, and KRS-One, and has also performed at the Lyricist Lounge. The Last Emperor released his debut album, Music, Magic, Myth. The Last Emperor's album titled Wizard's Wardrobe was slated for a release date of June 27, 2010, but never materialized, though a music video for the first single, Fine Art, was released. So first and foremost, let me say that that was way more information than I expected to be there for such an underground artist, but that's a good thing for sure. I actually wish we had more information like this on the dudes that we know the least about, because a lot of times it seems like the people we already know almost everything about give us a Bible of information, and it's like, all right, yep, I knew they sold a lot of records, I knew they won a lot of awards, I knew this, I knew that. And then the artists who we may not know much of, almost no information is given, and we remain in limbo aside from my write-ups of the artists, which provide detailed descriptions on their music and what they were able to do as an artist, but almost nothing about them personally, really. So glad to see here we were able to learn some things about The Last Emperor, but I did want to just say I was a bit confused by some of the things written in that bio. It said that he was signed to Aftermath Records and became Dr. Dre's protege, and then all of a sudden it jumps to him being signed by Raucous Records in 2003 with no explanations for anything. What happened with Aftermath? Why no music? Why not on the label anymore? So I did think that there were some things left to be desired there, but again, we got more info than I expected to get, so I won't complain too much. But speaking of my write-ups, let's get into mine on The Last Emperor. I knew of The Last Emperor in high school thanks to my Napster surfing days and my discovery of underground hip-hop. That being said, I only knew one of his songs. While I do remember loving it, I didn't realize just how technically good not only that song, but he himself was. He was great with both rhyme schemes and rhyming a lot of syllables. He was also good at keeping a topic and was able to tell good stories. On top of that, he still managed to have a fair amount of dope lines, finishing him as a great lyricist overall. There was good news and bad news when it came to The Last Emperor's albums. The bad news is that there was only one of them. The good news is that it was a classic album. Not only that, but he has one of the highest total album scores thus far in the study, second to only Eminem. Of his only 28 songs registered for scoring, 6 were great, none were weak, and another 20 were good. That means this man only put out 2 average songs in his catalog, and over 90% of his music is good or better, which could possibly be the highest percentage we've seen thus far. When it came to impact, there wasn't much there to give The Last Emperor credit for. He didn't help his case at all by not having any names on his list of artists influenced, nor by only registering 1 album for scoring. As seems to typically be the case with these types of artists, The Last Emperor made up for what he lacked in impact with originality. Almost everything about him, from his style, content, message, and delivery, to his song topics like Secret Wars Part 1 and 2, was super original. So, this sounds like the epitome of these write-ups that are just so bittersweet. On one hand, we have a great lyricist scoring with some of the highest scores these categories have seen when it comes to technical skills and talent and ability and things like that. But again, when it comes to impact, a below average score. Now, again, that doesn't mean that he won't finish well, but it certainly does mean that what appears to be a top MC here, at least technically speaking, will probably not finish as such due to a below average score. And as harsh as that sounds, at this point in the study, coughing up any points in any categories is going to prevent you from being in that top 10 or so, unfortunately. But let's check out the official numbers here for The Last Emperor and see where he winds up. Lyrics, he gets an 8. Like I said, man, just flat out great lyricist. We were just talking before about how impressive it was that Cuban Link got all the way to a 7 on 2 albums. Here we have the next guy that we're covering in the same damn episode gets to an 8 on just 1 album. I mean, this guy was great with all sorts of different complicated rhyme schemes. He was great with rhyming a lot of syllables. He was good at keeping a topic. He was able to tell good stories. He had enough dope lines that on top of all of this other shit that he was doing, it was like, damn, this guy is still saying dope shit on top of all of this. Because a lot of times it really is a trade-off. You know, like, we'll see people like, and I'm not trying to knock this guy because he's one of my favorite rappers of all time, but typically we see people like KRS-One, and this isn't always the case, but I'm just generally speaking here, where KRS-One can do it all, but not necessarily at the same time. So what I mean by that is KRS-One will have dope bars, deep bars, meaningful shit. KRS-One can also rhyme a lot of syllables. KRS-One is also very good at using different rhyme schemes. KRS-One is also good at rhyming a lot of single syllable rhymes per bar. So KRS-One is good at all that shit, but it's usually only one at a time. When KRS is saying deep or dope or meaningful shit, it's usually a lower amount of syllables rhymed. There's usually not a rhyme scheme on it. Then on another song or on another couple of bars, there may be a lot of syllables rhymed. There may be rhyme schemes in there, things like that. So I'm not even saying that he can't do it all in one song, but he doesn't do it all in the same sequence put together. This guy was just doing all of it. Like, this guy would just have, you know, a dope line that had a good rhyme scheme and fucking 10 syllables rhymed all within 2 bars. Now, I'm not saying every batch of 2 bars that he spit was like that, but he was pretty consistently like that. Very, very impressive stuff here lyrically for The Last Emperor. And this just makes you wonder, man. I mean, again, you don't know that this guy would have continued to do this. We could speculate with this all we want about so many people. Big L, Biggie, Big Pun, you know, whoever. All these people that have 1, 2, 3 albums, stuff like that. Cuban Link, same boat, really. You could speculate all day, like, damn, can you imagine if this dude had 10, 15 albums? Like, bruh. But we don't know that he would have kept that pace through 10 or 15 albums. But, man, let me tell you. Had he kept that pace through 10, 15 albums, he could have been one of the greatest rappers of all time, no doubt about it. So a great lyric score of 8 in the lyrics department for The Last Emperor. Albums, he gets a 7.59 with 1 classic, and although he only gets the 1 extra point for the classic album there, again, we have a guy who 100% of his albums were classics, and we have the 2nd highest album score of all time here, 2nd to only Eminem. Now, again, when you only have 1 album, it's obviously a lot easier to achieve a massive album score, but let's not take away from the fact that that album had to be a ridiculous classic in order to get you that high of an album score, right? It's kind of similar to me when people get really, you know, pissed off about PEDs, and I'm not saying that I'm for PEDs or that I support PED use or anything like that, but I just don't think that people take, you know, everything into consideration all the time. Well, this guy's hit 67, and I don't know baseball, so don't, you know, quote me here on the numbers, but, well, this guy's hitting 60, 70 home runs a season, but he took PEDs, so of course he's hitting that many. Well, what about the pitchers that are throwing to him that are on PEDs when the other guy didn't have pitchers throwing to him on PEDs, right? And then another, you know, ridiculous example is when somebody looks insane. Like, take Arnold Schwarzenegger, for example, right? Guy looked ridiculous. Now, I'm not saying I like it. I'm not saying I want to look like that. I have no desire at all to look like that. But what I'm saying is, when you talk about bodybuilding, you talk about being jacked, you talk about having big muscles, being cut up, being sculpted, being chiseled, right? Just being all out ridiculous. Arnold Schwarzenegger looked ridiculous. Then you got people that turn around and say, oh, well, he took steroids. Well, what does that mean, bro? If you took steroids, you would look like that? Absolutely not. What about all the other guys that were on stage with him? They all took steroids too, but he beat them. You know what I'm saying? So to me, if it's an even playing field, I don't really know what it matters. And my point in saying all of that is, yes, it's absolutely more impressive to get to a certain level naturally. It's absolutely more impressive to keep that score over 10, 15, 20 albums. No question about that. But keep in mind that had somebody done that, they would have gotten credit for it because they would have gotten all those extra points for all the classic albums, right? He didn't give himself that chance. But again, you can't just turn around and say, well, of course his album score is so high. He only had one album. Well, of course he's jacked. He took steroids. That doesn't make any sense, bro. Trust me. You, to look like that, you have to do the right cycles paired with the right shit at the right time, and you have to work out like a fucking animal, and you have to have a really good diet. It just is what it is. So you can't just say, well, he took steroids. You take steroids. You're not going to look like that. So there's obviously a reason why somebody is achieving something at a certain level. So again, I just want to reiterate, more impressive had he had more albums, yes, but he still did it, right? So he's still getting a really solid album score there, just only limiting himself to the 1 point for the classic album, but really solid and impressive stuff there nonetheless. Songs, he gets a plus 0.21, and I think this is interesting because we have a scenario here where we got a guy that gets a higher album score in total than Cuban Link, but a lower song score in total. So the reason behind that is because Cuban Link was part of the Terror Squad album, which was not a classic, so that kind of lowered his album score a little bit. And the amount of percentage of songs that Cuban Link had great songs was a better percentage than The Last Emperor's percentage, but The Last Emperor only had his album counting in his album score. So that's how he managed to get a higher album score, but a lower song score. But nonetheless, this guy's still getting over a full 2 points here. We just spoke about it a minute ago. Anything above or below a full point here in this songs department starts to become pretty significant on your final score. So again, a full 2 points here and then some for The Last Emperor. So very, very solid stuff there in the songs department as well. Impact, he gets a below average score of a 4. We were just talking before when we spoke about Cuban Link's just below average impact score of 4.5. Again, very similar stuff here, just, you know, no major record label, no like singles and things like that. So it was just enough to bring him down to a 4, where Cuban Link was a 4.5 due to being signed with Terror Squad, having songs with Big Pun, you know, a couple of popular songs that were out there. Flowers for the Dead, I believe, was on the radio, things like that. So nothing major, still just below average for Cuban Link, but a little bit more so, and a little bit more, a lot more of an underground rapper, I should say, here in The Last Emperor. And again, even though it's only a one album difference, The Last Emperor only putting out about 50% of the amount of material that Cuban Link did, even though Cuban Link had a very small amount of material. So he had a little bit more than 50% of the songs, but Cuban Link also registered 3 albums and 2 solos, whereas this guy only had just the 1 album. So a couple of things to keep in mind there, but I think it all adds up to a little bit lower of an impact score there. So he gets a below average score of a 4 in the impact department. And originality, he gets a 9. Like I said, there's just no debate in this. you know, what he lacked in impact, he made up for in originality, like I said earlier. And that's pretty typical of a lot of these really underground artists. They kind of just trade one thing for the other. And listen, I can't be mad at it. I got to respect it. Is the four still going in there? Of course it is. Is it still factoring into your overall score? Of course it is. But what would I rather see? Would I rather see you get an impact score of a 9, an originality score of a 4, or an impact score of a 4, an originality score of a 9? Me personally. And again, when it comes to the score, it doesn't matter which one you get. Those numbers are going to add up exactly the same. But for me personally, I'll always take the dude with the low impact, high originality. No doubt about it. It's not even up for debate for 1 second for me. But I mean, like I said earlier, just almost everything about this guy was original. Just his style, you know, his content, his messages, his delivery, his song topics. I mean, this guy had songs about superheroes, comic book characters and shit, fighting against rappers. And, you know, I spoke about that was the song that I knew from high school. And what's crazy is, you know, I couldn't wait to get up to it because I hadn't heard the song in so long. And I really was curious to see how it scored. But I'm not going to lie to you. I really didn't think. I thought it was going to be one of those songs that I was like mind blown by when I was younger. And then when I got to it and scored it, I was like, oh, that really wasn't even anything special. You know, I have nostalgia with it. I still love it. But technically speaking, it really didn't score anything special. But definitely not the case for The Last Emperor, man. I mean, this dude was pretty fucking ridiculous. So not only were they super original, but he murdered those songs along with pretty much everything else that he was on. So you add all those 6 numbers up. Again, we have 6 numbers here in the case, the same with The Last Emperor as it was for Cuban Link, because we have the extra point here for the classic album. So you add the 6 numbers up and you divide by 5, which is the number of categories we have. You get a final rating of 6.34. Which puts The Last Emperor in 19th place of 222 artists done overall. So first of all, that's a very impressive finish there in general. But to finish that high with an impact score of 4 and only having one album is absolutely remarkable. Had this guy been able to keep this pace for 10 plus albums, he may very well have had a case for being one of the greatest rappers of all time, like I was talking about earlier. But nonetheless, though, man, this dude is no joke. If you haven't heard him before, I strongly suggest going and taking a listen, because taking the impact score out of it, I honestly think this dude may have been one of the GOATs. Now, again, that would only hold true had he been able to keep this pace for 10 plus albums, which would be quite the task. But after what I witnessed when covering this guy, he's given me no reason whatsoever to doubt him. So hopefully one day this guy drops a couple more albums, because quite frankly, he's just too good to be presenting this small of a catalog. But nonetheless, huge shout outs to The Last Emperor for a hell of a finish here for sure. So we have 2 more episodes to go before we run off our lists again. So just a couple more weeks to see what list these guys made, if any. Again, if you'd like to see any of the lists, they're all in writing on the Tale of the Tapes Facebook page. If you're interested, the Facebook page is www.facebook.com/Tale of the Tapes Podcast. You can just give the page a like and follow to stay up to date or interact with the podcast, give ideas and predictions, check out any of the lists or whatever. You can also give the host website a visit at www.anchor.fm/Tale of the Tapes. Both of those links are spelled completely normally. And I want to say something here. I've been getting some donations recently, so I just want to say thank you for that. I really do appreciate it, and even though the money will probably never add up to the time and energy that I put into this, that's okay, because that's not why I'm doing it. But it is always nice when people reach out with a gesture like that. It motivates me a bit to do a good job. So thanks again to the people that have been helping out a little bit. But other than that, that's it for episode 7, and not for nothing, but 2 very impressive showings here from both of these artists today, so a solid episode, no question. Next week on episode 8, we'll be covering 50 Cent and Rockefeller's First Lady, Emil. Tale of the Tapes. Peace.
Tale of the Tapes. Might as well.